This is a production of Cornell University.
Hi, President Pollack. So it looks like it is 12:15. We've got about 32 attendees, so I believe we have quorum. So I would like to bring this meeting to order. I'm going to ask that Michelle Parco does roll call via a screenshot of the Zoom meeting. And I just want to thank President Pollack and Mary Opperman and Joel Molina for coming to the Employee Assembly. Many of us haven't seen you all since the President's Address to Staff, which was attended by nearly 2,000 people. And the feedback we've received has been resoundingly positive, not only because we get an extra day off for holiday break, but also because it sounds like the staff really appreciated the opportunity to connect in a meaningful way with President Pollack. Comments on not being able to see family members resonated with a lot of people, as did the idea for a street fair, which I think reminds us of how important it is to feel connected and engaged to one another during these times. So thank you all for your engagement on the President's Address to Staff, and thank you for coming today to the Employee Assembly. As we have done in the past, we're going to have a couple of minutes for remarks from President Pollack and Mary Opperman, and then we're gonna go into committee updates from the chairs of the Employee Assembly. And then I believe there's usually a portion for questions if time allows. Afterwards, we will continue on with the Employee Assembly business of the day and the new business as outlined in the agenda. So with that, I'm going to forward this over to President Pollack.
Thank you, Hey Hey. And I have to say, I love the idea of roll call by screenshot, one of the few things that Zoom makes easier rather than harder. I will try to be brief because, as always, I do want to hear what your committees are up to, and I do want to make sure there's time for questions. So just a few updates. First of all, because everybody always asks, I do want to give a quick update on COVID transmission. I think everybody knows that so far our numbers continue to be very good. Over the past 2 weeks, as of yesterday, we'd had done in 2 weeks just under 70,000 tests, and we had only 17 positives. Five of those were students and 12 are faculty and staff. Unfortunately, we're seeing staff living in communities around Ithaca where rates are higher, and that's causing challenges. But overall, the numbers are staying very, very low. They've been in line with what we've really been seeing since the second week of class. So that's a weekly positivity rate of 0.02%. Better than even our most optimistic scenarios. We've gotten real national coverage on that. The New York Times, the Washington Post, most recently Bloomberg. So again, I said it in my comments to the employees overall, and I say to all of you, thank you so much. I know how hard it is to comply with all these public health guidelines, not to mention all the other things that you're taking on to keep us there. And thank you for that. I also want to reiterate that our success is fragile. We're not out of the woods. It's really easy. I mean, you just look at the national news for one party, one family gathering to turn into a super spreader event. So please, please stay diligent. Keep wearing your masks. Keep getting tested. I can't tell you how critical it is. I go every Monday morning, early Monday morning to get my test, do the daily check. I know it's a hassle, but it really makes a difference. As I mentioned, we're seeing rates of infection tick up in counties around Tompkins County, where many of our faculty and staff live or have family members. And of course, nationally, numbers are up 45, almost 50% from just 2 weeks ago. And you might've heard Dr. Fauci, Cornell's own, Weill Cornell Medicine's Dr. Fauci, say we're really not in the position we want to be in as we head into the colder months. I know there's pandemic fatigue. I mean, I feel it myself. It's beautiful today. I just ran out and took a walk before this. Get outside if you can. Please limit travel. Please, you know, I said this in my speech the other day, I'm not gonna get to see my kids, and I'm totally bummed out about that, but we really, really, really have to stay safe, and hopefully by next Thanksgiving, this will be different. Please. Also, for those of you who aren't on campus now, or you're not approved to be on campus right now, I do want to let you know that after Thanksgiving, if you haven't seen the email that came out yesterday, there will be an opportunity for supplemental surveillance testing. Take a look at the email, and if you're interested in that, that is available to everyone. You know, finally, it is hard, right? Keep it up. I hope the extra day of winter break, I know it's just one day, but I hope that helps give you a longer time to sort of chill out and relax. We've been under extraordinary pressures this whole year. I think we're going to be under even more extraordinary pressures for the next days and weeks as we see whatever happens with the election play out. That's going to take a while. Nothing about the situation we're in is normal. Reach out to each other, check on each other, quick phone call, quick text. If you need more support, or the people who report to you or the people you work with need more support, please go to FSAP, the Faculty and Staff Assistance Program. They now have all telehealth appointments. They have counselors available by phone 24/7. They can provide confidential counseling or refer you to the resources that we have. While we're on the topic of staff benefits, I do want to follow up on a point that came up last time I talked to you, and that's the commitment that I made and that I still hold to re-examine the cuts to pay and benefits that we made over the summer in response to the budgetary impact of the pandemic. We are looking very, very carefully. We're scouring our budgets now. The provost and the EVP CFO are going through line by line with the hope that we will be able to do something to restore those cuts shortly after the first of the year. It's a little bit too early for me to make promises, but I can say that right now things are looking better than we had anticipated. And my commitment is if there's any way at all that we can stop those reductions and stay in balance, that is absolutely what we will do. We would like very much to restore benefits. I do want to take just one more minute, maybe two more minutes, and just say, you know, we always focus on operating through the coronavirus, operating through the pandemic. What are we going to do to keep infection numbers low and so on? But it's really important, I think, to remember why we're operating through the pandemic. And that is because this university, with the support of all of its faculty and all of its staff, are continuing to pursue our mission of engagement and research and teaching. And I could give you lots of examples of that, but I want to give you just two or three so that you feel good about what you're doing. This isn't just getting through the pandemic. This is continuing to have impact. So I want you to know that we just recently got a very large $32.6 million grant from the National Science Foundation going to Cornell's high energy synchrotron source, which we call CHESS. And this grant is going to let us build a high magnetic field beamline, an HMF beamline. Now, I'm not going to go into all the physics here, not only because, well, because I don't understand all the physics here. But I do know that this is a really significant investment on the part of the NSF. And once the HMF beamline is up, we're going to be able to have researchers doing studies that can't be done anywhere else in the world. There will be no other synchrotron in the world that can support these very advanced studies. The work of our synchrotron has already led to an enormous amount of pathbreaking work, including two Nobel Prizes. So it's really very exciting to think about the possibilities that this new HMF beamline will open. On the educational front, and what I like to call of as educational verve, the Institute for African Development, which is part of our Mario Einaudi Center for International Studies, was just awarded a three-year, $300,000 grant from the Department of Education to strengthen African studies and languages for Cornell undergraduates, both here and in Africa. You know, part of our mission at Cornell is to educate the next generation of global citizens. And this program is going to enable experiential education for our students in West Africa and in Southern Africa. And I think that's really going to enrich their understanding of these very important regions and cultures. And finally, I just want to call your attention to the new digital newsletter Belonging at Cornell that came out for the first time last month. You know, as social justice issues have become ever more urgent in our country, we, Vice President Opperman, Vice President Molina, the Provost, we've heard a lot of interest from our staff in programming and resources around diversity and equity and inclusion. And we've tried to bring that together to communicate with the broader community within the framework of Belonging at Cornell. The newsletter is going to be a way to share some of the efforts and stories from around campus with the entire community, activities, opportunities, news, events. It's going to come out 4 to 6 times a year. And we really wanted to showcase what everyone is doing. We're a big community, and it's not always easy for us to keep track of the good things that are going on. So if you have something to share, please share it. You can email to BAC newsletter, so Belonging at Cornell, BAC newsletter at cornell.edu. There are a lot more updates that I could share, but as I say, I'd really rather have the time to hear from you and to talk with you. So I think I'll stop there, except to say it has been an extraordinary semester, a stressful semester. I was at a Zoom earlier this morning, and the provost said, you know, the one thing that he really thinks shines in this semester is the degree to which there's been teamwork. Everyone in the community has stepped up, and it's really been just impressive. And I just feel so good about it. And I give my deepest thanks and gratitude for all of you, to all of you for that. Thank you, Hey.
Thank you, President Pollack. So then with that said, we will move into committee reports. We're going to start with Michelle Perko for the executive committee report.
Hi there. Thank you, President Pollack, for meeting with us today, and Mary Opperman. We met, the executive committee met last Thursday, and before I had to run to another meeting, the our guest for that meeting was Jennifer Fonseca, and she talked about some programs that are in conception and initiation phase with Mary Opperman's team. And then we were discussing whether the EA wants to be on a task team. So that's open for further discussion. And we talked about staff forums that will resume most likely after the town hall. So maybe starting in December or January, we'll resume those staff forums. But we first want to get the town hall. We don't want to compete with the provost town hall. So we're thinking of a December staff forum. There's some ideas out there. We definitely want to hear from Anne, who has always been on our staff forums in the past for the COVID-related items. So we're really just working on resuming the executive committee, resuming staff forums, and working with Jennifer and Mary's teams on some of the programs that are in conception and initiation phases. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Feel free to use the participants hand raise function so that I may call on you if there are comments. All right, seeing none, let's move on to the Communications and Awards Committee. This is Ellen Miller. Ellen, I'm going to send this over to you.
Hello. Our committee, the Communications Outreach and Recognition Committee, has a pretty big charge. So we promote the work of the EA around the campus community, coordinate events sponsored and hosted by the EA. We're also doing outreach events and in charge of some staff recognition awards. So it's a lot of stuff. And I don't have a communications background. I was on the communications committee last year, but I'm diving in as the chair this year, trying to just find my place and figure out what the best way to get our message out and to coordinate with all the other offices and programs on campus to get you know, important news, events, updates out to the whole staff community. So we're just learning as we go, but we're, you know, just trying to use all of our resources and work with the community as a whole. We have 16 members on the committee, and we're meeting regularly every 2 weeks. And so far this term, we have issued the resolution EA2 in recognition and appreciation of voluntary retirement incentive program participants. That was very well received, and I think it was really important to recognize those employees and what they have done for Cornell over the years and the sacrifice that they made for us in this time. We published our EA Voice newsletter on October 19th. And we've made a commitment to publish regularly on a monthly basis. And in that first newsletter, we had a promo for the president's address, an introduction to our EA Appreciation Award, a highlight on our new membership, promo for some other events on campus, including the CRC Halloween photo contest that they had, the Go Purple Day for Domestic Violence Awareness. And we also had a request for feedback on the campus code of conduct. That's an ongoing process with that. Then for the president's address to staff, we just tried to get the word out there as much as we could. And the participant report showed that there were over 2,100 unique views to that address. So we were very happy with the turnout. And as Hey mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, we received a lot of positive feedback about the event and about your messaging that you provided to the community. So we're very happy with the, how that turned out. And then during the event, we presented the Employee Appreciation Award to Building Care team. And we're just really happy to recognize this team of individuals because they've been there throughout this entire time, every single day, making sure that the campus is clean and safe for everyone. And we're working right now on getting recognition to each of the individual members of that team. There's 384 employees that make up the Building Care team with facilities and campus services. And we want to make sure that we recognize each one of them individually, because I think it's really important that they get that individualized appreciation to know that their efforts are really, you know, warranted and that we really appreciate them. So that's what we've done so far this term. And coming up, we're gonna be launching our EA priorities poll. That's gonna go out in our next EA Voice newsletter, which is scheduled for November 16th. And in the poll, the purpose of the poll is to ask the general staff population, what do you think should be the employee assembly's top priority for the coming year? And last year we learned that the priorities were employee health and well-being and parking and transportation. We have a feeling this year that those priorities are gonna be very different. So it's an important measure for us to see what, you know, what the staff really, really wants us to focus on and is interested in expanding on. And that way we can take that information and give it to each of our committee chairs, and those committees can tackle the issues head on. So we're looking forward to that. Also for that newsletter that's coming up on November 16th, we plan to do a brief recap of the President's Address and Appreciation Award. We'll do a last call for the Campus Code of Conduct feedback. Our welfare committee and our education committee have asked for highlights to be in there. So we're going to highlight some of the work that they're doing, and I'm sure they'll talk about that during their committee reports. And we'll promo the faculty and staff town hall. And we also we're planning on putting on some information about winter weather policy reminders and resources, because we saw our first snowfall, so we know that's right around the corner. Also coming up, our awards and recognition. So we have two main awards that the Employee Assembly is responsible for, in addition to the Appreciation Award that we did just last month. We have the George Peter Award for Dedication, which is for an employee that has a high degree of excellence in performance of their duties, provides a willingness to extend themselves to help others, and goes above and beyond their normal expectations. And then we also have what has previously been known as the Opperman Award for Staff Advocacy, and that's for outstanding leadership and being an active voice for the staff. And both of those awards have not been presented to anyone since 2018. So we're really want to revamp those programs, rework them, promote them, get them out there, and make them strong for 2021, because I feel like at this time, especially, that recognition, you know, is needed and appreciated by the employees. So we really want to make the awards and recognition a high priority in the coming months. And I think that about does it for us. We're always thinking about other ways that we can partner to get information out to the employees and staff. We had talked about a possibility of making a shared calendar creation with EA news and events that we can offer to people. We, we've touched base with the university's relations office and their CU info page and their faculty and staff weekly newsletter. So we're working with them, you know, to make sure that we're sharing information with them for that, and with HR and working at Cornell. So just trying to make all those partnerships so that all the information can get out there. So that's that.
Thank you, Ellen. I want to open this time up for questions or comments. I think I have a comment, and that is that you're doing an amazing job, Ellen. I feel like you said that you are you haven't had a communications role in the past, but I feel like you've taken on these new responsibilities and really grown. So I want to thank you so much for all of your work, and it sounds like you got a lot on your plate. I want to open this up for any comments. Anybody have their hand raised to ask any questions? It sounds like you got a lot going on.
I'll piggyback on your comment, Hey, and just say that the committee is amazing. Everyone, like I said, we have 16 members on the committee, and everyone has been really active and involved, and I'm really impressed with the work that everyone's doing, and thankful for the team. And I'm glad to have also Marin Cherry from New York City is on the communications committee. So we have that link with Cornell Tech, so we can also make sure that we're getting information out to them and that they're receiving the information in the right ways. So it's a really good team, and I'm happy to be doing it.
Thank you. Seeing no hands raised, I'm going to move on to the education committee. So Laura Taylor, who is currently the chair, is unable to attend. And just to provide an update, she, due to work responsibilities, as we've seen a lot of staff members having to take on and absorb other responsibilities as people have retired or vacancies remain unfilled, we're seeing that, you know, a lot is on her plate with the work that she's doing in terms of her international work. So I am here to provide the education committee update. We have met. We've sort of gone over the committee rules, the bylaws, the summary report, and we've talked about education broadly and how we can sort of support right now in this time, you know, opportunities for employee degree programs, employees taking classes, CU Learn opportunities. So I know that Laura has reached out to Ellen to sort of try to partner on how to sort of publicize from sort of maybe an anecdotal perspective, how taking advantage of educational opportunities have helped different staff members. So within even our committee, there are people who have taken classes, who have, you know, been involved with different learning opportunities, myself included. I've taken a corporate financial accounting course, not very exciting, but to write a blurb about it, to kind of just remind people that it might be a little intimidating, but it's very well worth it. And one of the very unique benefits of working at Cornell to take advantage of these educational opportunities. I think there's an opportunity to use, you know, our platform, our newsletter, whatever, you know, channels we have to sort of spread the word about, you know, our educational opportunities, especially during this time when perhaps maybe some individuals have some time to grow and advance and sort of develop more skills. There are some good channels for them to sort of tap into during this time. So we are working on, you know, these different pieces, these different stories to do the storytelling in regards to education and opportunities available. I know that there have been different ideas sort of shared. I believe Rigel has mentioned, you know, the potential for a staff forum in regards to educational opportunities. So that is something in a very, very initial phase right now. And I think it's something to consider, especially as maybe some people have some time and they want to explore different opportunities outside of their existing job responsibilities, if at all possible. So our next meeting is November 20th. In between, we'll continue, you know, being in touch and working on different news, newsletter opportunities and opportunities to engage with other groups on campus in regards to the educational opportunities. And I believe we are going to try to get in touch with the previous chair of the education committee to kind of share some ideas as well. So that is the update in regards to the education committee. Are there any questions or comments?
Hey, can I ask a question? This is
Mark. Yeah, sure.
So it's not really a question, it's a comment, and it's probably for next year's education committee. But I do want to mention that as all our courses have been online this year, we've recorded an awful lot of them. These are, you know, the 4-credit courses for our students, and we're going to be curating many of them. We're going to have a lot of material available 6, 9, 12 months from now. And it might be interesting. I mean, right now, just like the staff, the faculty are just stretched to the limit. And I don't think we're in a position to offer anything specific now, but just to sort of put a post in the ground, 6, 9, 12 months from now, we ought to think about whether some of that material would be of interest, because we could certainly make it available to the staff. You know, so if you're interested in, I don't know, 19th century music or something, and you would just like to go through the courses, that kind of thing would be available.
I think that's a great idea. I mean, in our education committee, somebody talked about a beekeeping course that they took, which sounded really fascinating. So
the wine tasting course.
Yeah. I don't know how that would happen virtually, but that would be lovely. I see Kit, your hand is raised.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on all of that. I think those, again, great initiatives. I'd love to see a staff forum on those, on the development opportunities available. I personally am enrolled in a course this semester, and it's been interesting saying that I have my first prelim and all of that lingo that the students use, but I found it enriching, and it's really great to experience Cornell from a different facet. So I wholeheartedly support this.
Yeah, thank you. I absolutely agree. When I took my course, it made me feel more connected to the student experience on campus. So thank you for that. Is there any additional feedback in regards to that? Seeing no other hands raised, I'm going to move on to Ryan Goodell with the Benefits and Policy Committee for his update.
Hi, thank you, Martha and Mary, for being here. And Joel, if you're still here. So we met this week, we met on the 3rd and discussed, we only have a couple things on our agenda that we discussed. One of them was release time for committees and kind of looking at that policy. We have a policy, but we're not sure if it's a legit policy or not. So we're doing some research on that. We had a couple members do a lot of research on policies and release time for committees with other institutions and peer institutions stuff. And we're putting together some stuff to figure out if there's anything we can do to improve that policy or not, and share it. And so that's something that we've been working on lately. I will sign up for that wine tasting. I think I can do it virtually. I really do. On another note, I wanted to ask either Mary or Martha their feelings about researching the release time for committees and their feelings on that, if they have any feelings towards that. I mean, one of the reasons I think it came about is one of the clerical staff was having difficulty with a manager that wasn't releasing them to participate in self-governance. And so that was what spurred the whole conversation, I believe. And I just was wondering your thoughts of straightening that language or if what you feel about that.
Apologies, my little yours was meant to say, Mary, you're the one who's the expert there. You try and answer that, please. But it went to everybody. So there we go.
Brian, so let's, I think we can take this offline. So this is a delicate balance, as you know. We want people to work in the shared governance space. At the same time, we have to recognize that we also have some jobs that make that a lot more challenging than other jobs. So that's why the language that you've seen is not an absolute set of language, because it's hard to apply it absolutely. But let's have a conversation about how we can. What I find is that if we do this, and I've done this for years, if we take a look at the individual issue and we have a conversation specifically about that issue, we can usually find a solution. It's hard to write an absolute in there. But let's take it offline and talk about it for sure.
All right, thank you for that. The other thing we talked about is tapping into, I'm not sure, and it was said that maybe Mary, you can help with this as well, about the belonging at Cornell survey that was done, if it's possible, or if there was any information, data from that we can get to guide some of the BBC and what they could do and what they can explore.
Yeah, so my suggestion would be to have Linda come and do an overview of Linda Kroll Hull, the overview of what the data found. It's helpful, but as you can understand, it's directional as opposed to absolute. So I think it's helpful to understand it. and then figure out based on it what else you might need to learn or talk about or do. But why don't you have her come and do a presentation?
Very good, thank you. Other than that, we're kind of laying low, haven't had much come at us in the world of policies and procedures. I think a lot of that is because the campus isn't as full of people with concerns as they normally are. So I think that's, in a way, the benefits of policies committees is getting a benefit from it, I guess. So that's all I have.
Thank you, Brian. Are there any questions or comments? I'm looking for any hands raised. I am seeing none. So we're going to move to the final committee report, and then we're going to allow some time for Mary Opperman to make some remarks. So I'm going to send this over to Nasser with the elections committee update.
Thank you very much, Hey, and thank you, President Pollack and Mary, for joining today. I'm a new member to the Employee Assembly, and so I'm very much still learning names and procedures. I'm particularly indebted and grateful to half a dozen or so individuals who have really been extremely generous with their time and their insights and have really created a supporting, helping environment to lay the framework and foundation going forward. Certainly with our committee, the one highlight that I think is important to note is that we will be carrying the baton forward of the great, tremendous work that Jessica Withers, our predecessor chairwoman of the election committee, did and the committee last semester. So really, amidst the Black Swan events, put forward a entirely remote and relatively seamless operation for our elections. And that's in August. But in addition to that, and really just highlighting and building off the work that she and the committee did with their ad hoc membership task force and a lot of changes to really reform, update, and I think professionalize the work of the election committee and really the structure that we have. And so it's our obligation and prerogative to carry that work forward. And our 18 member committee will do so at our sort of inaugural commencement events next Tuesday on November 10th. And we have a laundry list of items that were left behind to cover and to build off of into this 2021 election cycle and beyond. And beyond the scope of this limited purpose, I will say that there are really two main focuses as we think about entering into the next phase of the spring elections in the weeks and months ahead. And those really come into the dual buckets of cleaning up a little bit of the kinks when it comes to what will be a highly hybrid staff operation where, to echo the sentiments of President Pollack and Mary, that you know, those who can continue to do remote work will, and a sizable population and not insignificant population will be remote. And so thinking, what are the lessons learned and what are the ways that we can go from good, better to best and carrying out a remote election in the spring? And the second, it's related, is really just increasing participation. And I think there's a couple idiosyncrasies that really stand out about this next election that come out of the work of the prior committee. And some of those include new seats, right? School of Public Policy, Cornell, 20 years of service. And very excitingly, the BIPOC seats for our Black, Indigenous, and persons of color who will have a seat for the first time designated to that body of our staff population. But also, and this is my sort of closing point and then question that I'd like to put forward to the group at large, because I think it will be a formative talking point, is, you know, it's my hypothesis that the suspension of what was the 25 signature requirement this past August in our elections, given that we were remote and not online for in-person campaigning, really, I think, drove or may have been one of several factors that contributed to increased participation, whether that was for candidates and running for offices and having more contested offices rather than uncontested offices, which historically may have been the case, but also in terms of the number of individuals who, I think that's really where it comes in. So I, you know, it's the prerogative of the election committee to, and that's not in the bylaws is my understanding, to guide this forward, but as an open question, I think when we talk about, and piggybacking off of our colleague Brian's comments in his last committee, the Benefits and Policy Committee, the sentiment of increasing participation from other populations on campus, right? Our frontline workers, our non-exempt workers who may not be in a position to necessarily get those 25 signatures. Is that a practice requirement that we could do away with in the future? Particularly if it's for verification purposes, comes off as maybe somewhat superfluous because the candidacy would be verified and checked by the Office of Assemblies anyhow. So that's where we are. That's sort of my question. If I can leave that open to the group or whoever it's appropriate to take it to get your thoughts and guidance forward, we greatly appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm looking for any hands raised for commentary on that. Kit?
Nasser, that was an interesting point I had not thought about prior to just now. So I appreciate you bringing that up about the requirement of signatures for an employee to run on the assembly. And I would like to echo the sentiment that I think, yes, for folks like our frontline workers, me being as the non-exempt representative, that would pose a challenge at times, possibly depending on the person's management, as a barrier to being able to run in the election, where I, perhaps even just the voting itself during the election would, I guess going back to what the purpose of those signatures are, is to endorse the candidates. I can't think of the word, but basically that they would be able to have that, run that, or have that role successfully, not necessarily that the person would vote for them. And I think perhaps if we did do away with that and being trusting of our staff community to vote for candidates that would already be of sound judgment to fulfill the position duties, might just be a reason to consider eliminating that.
Thank you. Seeing some nods.
Hey, may I ask a clarifying question?
Sure, Joe.
The clarifying question that I have is, would the expectation be that those signatures come from our constituents? if so, I don't believe that that's really conducive to the LGBTQ+ population. You know, you can't walk up to someone's desk and say, hey, I hear you're gay, sign this for me so that I can run. So if it's signatures from anyone, I can get behind that. But if it's signatures from the group that we're gonna represent.
I believe the signatures are from any staff, but I think that this is a good correct question to sort of work through in the committee. So if there are any, no other questions, I'd like to sort of table that for a committee discussion. I am sorry, I overlooked the welfare committee, which is chaired by Christy Mahoney. So I want to move on to that. I'm going to send this over to Christy Mahoney.
Hello, thank you, Hey. I'm going to apologize in advance. I am feeling a little distracted and less than articulate today, and Nasser is a tough act to follow. So I'm going to do my best to share what the work we've been doing. So the committee, we just had a meeting right before this meeting, and I posed to them, what is the work that we've done that you want to share with the president and vice presidents? Overwhelmingly, this committee is very engaged and very collaborative. We have developed a very strong relationship with Michelle Arteby in work life and workforce well-being, with Ruth Howell in the wellness, staff wellness, with Bridget Brady in transportation and Reed in transportation services. We've collaborated with Linda Kroll Howell and Todd Baker in the musculoskeletal program, MIPP program. And so the committee feels very strongly that we're an opportunity to provide voice to initiatives of those groups before, from staff, before those initiatives go live, that we're able to help them think through how to improve the programming and initiatives, and that we're able then to provide an extension of the support and echo the work through the EA. We've done that through some of the wellness initiatives, around the commuting, around the walks at lunch, around the meditation and stretching initiatives, the work from home initiatives with Todd Baker and the small videos that they've been putting out, the social media campaign between wellness and work life that Ashley and has worked on. We had developed two subcommittees, one working on work from home ergonomic issues that was very active over the summer, collaborated with Ruth. I would think helped as they were working through their work from home guidance document, think through some of the challenges. And then a second subcommittee looking at safe spaces and challenges and opportunities for us there. We're engaged with the Care Fund, and the Care Fund group has done an amazing job at revamping their website and the outreach there. So there's active engagement there. Also, we partnered with communications and work life on the DV domestic violence awareness initiative, and are supporting the Big Red Rights initiative, which is a pen pal initiative that should be coming out, I think, before the end of this year. We've pitched and are very supportive of a wellness featured forum series that the exec committee discussed at the beginning. And we've sponsored some resolutions. So when I think back to the last update we gave you was about the inclement weather resolution, and that seems like two lifetimes ago to me now. But since then, we worked on an essential employee recognition resolution. We underwrote the communications resolution acknowledging the retiree group. We sponsored a resolution recognizing the contributions of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And today we'll be presenting a resolution thanks to the initiatives of members that are outside the EA on our committee to recognize the students and their contributions to the success of this term. So we'll be discussing that today. If anyone on the committee thinks I should have said something I didn't, please speak up now.
I'm looking for any hands raised. I believe President Pollack has an appointment at one, yeah. So I'm going to forward this over to President Pollack. Yeah,
thank you. I apologize. I have another Zoom I have to get onto like immediately. I do think Mary's going to stay and talk to you, but again, thank you. I know it's been an incredibly tough semester. We'll get through it. We'll get through the few months after that, and we are going to have one heck of a street fair this summer. Knock wood that everything's good by then. Thank you all so much, and I apologize for having to jump out.
Thank you, President Pollack. Were there any questions, comments for the Welfare Committee? Seeing none, I'm going to Andrea, I see your hand is physically raised.
You captured everything, Christy. So there you go. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm looking for any blue hands or any physical hands raised. Seeing none, I'm going to forward this over to Mary Offerman for some words.
Thank you for just giving me a couple minutes here. So the decision about whether or not to drop the signatures is absolutely yours to make, but let me just give you a couple things to think about. I think one of the things I like about working with the Employee Assembly is it really has low barriers to participation. And so I would just offer that if you're new to this community, that might seem kind of daunting, and also that not everyone who would be a great participant in the EA might feel extroverted enough to go out and get those. So it's just something for you all to consider as you grapple with that. I just had a couple of things. If you have children in the schools, or you know of people who do, you know that other illnesses are beginning to emerge in the community. So we still have COVID to deal with, but we are starting to see strep emerge. And I suspect that the flu will be coming shortly. So just be aware for those of you and for your colleagues who are balancing work and family obligations that we're beginning to see the emergence of all other kinds of illnesses. On the Belonging at Cornell initiatives, I hope that we can continue to partner on those. We're really just getting started, but we have some really interesting and important ideas to move forward, some changes or potential changes and improvements to our practices around hiring and retention. One of the things that we've noticed as the cases in the communities around us, including actually Tompkins County, have begun to rise, is a sense from people who are testing positive that that is a failure on their part. Because we stress so much of our prevention, that if someone ends up positive, I think that there's an unintended consequence that people feel like they failed. And I just want to say that we are asking everyone to do as much as they can, and someone can do everything and still come down with the virus. And so as you think about this and supporting your colleagues, we, Ann and I, Ann Jones and I put out a little video. We really want people to focus on their health and their well-being, and we want them to be really open about who they've been with and contacts so we can try to stem the spread. And then I guess last, I wanted to end on a positive note, which is, you know, we have a world of challenges. We always do. We're a big place. Lots of crazy things happen. But I just want to say that I think what we've learned through this is that we can model having differences and still moving things forward in a positive and constructive way. Country could take a lesson in that. We don't have to agree on everything in order to agree on our respect for one another and on our beliefs that we're better together. So you all have modeled that from the beginning. It's not been an easy time for us, but it's been terrific for me to have you as a partner. So I just wanted to say that. Back to you.
Thank you. Are there any questions, comments? Kate, I wasn't sure if your hand was raised or you were coming down. Seeing none. Oh, wait, Joe, I see your hand is raised.
Sorry, I was debating whether or not I should say this, and I'm going to say it as tactfully as I can. There, as we're looking at some of the bias training, for example, we're looking at diversity awareness. You take the supervision at Cornell course, and there's a whole module on sexual harassment that is very heterosexual in nature. So if there was a way to expand our understanding of, you know, all individuals need to have these protections, and maybe tweak some of our existing professional development that's out there. That was just a suggestion.
Yeah, it's a great point. You know, I think we're never done when it comes to creating a sense of inclusion in the workplace. And so if our programs need to be tweaked, the Title IX required state Title IX training has been, in terms of what we're required to train on, has been evolving. So if you've taken that one, you know, it's actually a program that we are using that the state provided. So we will be happy to partner as we try to figure out how to improve that. Every year they sort of change what you need to put in it, and they do that in a little bit of a late timeframe. So definitely. In terms of the other training that we have, Joe, let's talk about it. If there are things we need to do to make sure that we're not excluding people as we talk about fairness and oppression and inclusion and systemic behaviors, we want to know that, and we want to improve. So please don't feel like you have to, there's nothing that you said that in any way is offensive. Improvement is a shared opportunity.
I've taken a CU Learn course. Is it possible to access that content again so that I can review some of the things that I've done?
Yes.
It is possible. Okay.
It is.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? If not, I am going to move into the business of the day. Okay. Mary Opperman, were you waving goodbye or?
As much as I would love to, I'm not a member, so I'm going to go ahead and leave. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you all for your participation. Let's move on to EAR4 in recognition and appreciation of Cornell University students. I'm going to pass this over to Christy Mahoney.
So I've asked that the committee members who really worked on this present it for you. Dahlia, I think she dialed off. She's a non-EA member who this idea originated with, and she worked closely with Brian and Jessica, and I believe Jessica is going to present the resolution for us.
Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you. And oh, I'm sorry, Dahlia had to leave. So yes, this was her idea, and she's a staff member on the welfare committee. So I wanted to make sure she got some recognition here. So the thought behind this is that the students have really done an amazing job. When they came back this semester, you know, our positive cases went way up, and I think I was not the only one to think in a couple of weeks they're all gonna go home and our finances are gonna tank. But the students have done an amazing job, and we really wanted to thank them and show our appreciation for their for exercising good judgment and for being responsible and making, you know, taking some of the weight off staff shoulders. We already are doing a lot, and it just made it a little bit easier for all of us to not have to be, to not have Cornell's finances worsen simply because the students wanted to have fun, which we all did when we were in college. So that's what this is about. It's pretty standard. I see there is already a note that yes, there's some grammatical, there's at least one grammatical change that needs to happen. But I don't think there's a lot more I can say about it. We just really wanted to formally thank the students for what they've done this semester. It's not easy.
Thank you, Jessica. I agree. Are there any questions? We've shared this in the agenda. Are there any discussions around questions surrounding the resolution? Changes would, you know, grammatical changes can be complete afterwards, but really this is a discussion about the resolution overall. Are there any questions, concerns, comments? I'm looking for any hand raises. Are there any motions to end discussion? Brian?
Yeah, I move that we call a question and end debate.
Okay. Do I get a second? Okay, Rachel, Joe has raised her hand. So we have ended debate. All right. So we're going to move on to the next item on business of the day, and then we're going to return to this new business for a vote. I'm going to now go over to Jackie in regards to her endorsement for the Faculty Senate resolution. So Jackie, are you with us?
I'm here. Hello.
Hi, Jackie.
So I basically was asked as the representative in the Faculty Senate for the EA to get an endorsement for a resolution that they plan on voting in their next meeting, which is November 11th. And basically the resolution is looking to propose Dr. Barbara McClintock as the name for one of those five dormitories that are being set up in the North Campus region, two which have already been named for other alums, namely Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Toni Morrison. So they are looking for us to endorse that so they can make that nomination stronger for the people who are making that decision. So I'm happy to take any comments or feedback from the group.
So I'm looking for any hands raised. I just have a quick question, and this is for Gina. In regards to endorsements for the Faculty Senate resolution, do we have to write our own resolution, or do we just email and say, we endorse this resolution? How does that work, Gina?
Sorry, I think the stronger position would be to draft your own resolution that references the Faculty Senate, but that way it's a legislation coming from the Employee Assembly itself rather than just tacking your name on, which has symbolic gesture, but this is sort of a more concrete support for the initiative. That said, I think Jackie can coordinate with Charlie Van Loan and, you know, whoever else on the Faculty Senate to find out what they're actually looking for. But one is, one just has a different perception, even though it is legislation, an actual resolution coming from the Employee Assembly has different, it is responded to the Assembly by the President as opposed to just sort of being a passive part of the Faculty Senate. So it's up to you. Both are very good. One is just a little bit different in terms of how it's processed in the as legislation.
That's good to know. Thank you, Gina. So I think because I want to make sure that they have something ready from us, ready for the November 11th vote. How about everybody who wants to provide feedback or even just agree can comment on the document inbox. And I will reach out to Charlie Van Loan and ask him about a resolution from us and then work on that, potentially finishing that after the November 11th meeting and just submitting that at a time that's less restricted.
Thank you, Jackie. I see that Ellen has her hand raised. Ellen?
I was just gonna say that I support a resolution if that's the direction that you wanna go in, and I would be happy to help you with that if you hang out.
Appreciate the offer to help because I'm definitely gonna be multitasking a lot in the next couple weeks.
Thank you, Ellen. Are there any comments? I am looking through. So I don't see any comments. So it sounds like, Jackie, you're going to get back to Charlie Van Loon and then work on a resolution, and then we'll convene and then vote on that after they've had theirs. But just so that they kind of know, we do support and we'll create our own resolution, which will go through a committee. Once approved by that committee, come to the Employee Assembly for a vote. Okay, sounds good. Ellen, you have your hand raised.
What committee do you recommend that this flow through? Does it really matter? I'm just trying to think, like, where does it really fit with the committee charter? Is that something, I don't know.
Good question. I would say it could come through the executive committee, but Gina, do you have any?
I think that's
right. Gina's got a head nod. So that would be the direction I would advise you in.
So I can work on that with Jackie if she'd like.
Perfect. Very well. Thumbs up. So seeing no other hands raised for commentary on this, we are moving on to new business. So vote on EAR4, which is the in recognition and appreciation of Cornell University students. So right now, I believe there are going to be changes to what Jessica had mentioned, the maybe some grammatical things, and then it's going to say EAR4. So we're just voting on EAR4, which is in recognition and appreciation of Cornell University students for all that they've done to kind of adhere to safety measures and keep us safe and help us out as a university as a whole. So do I get a motion to vote? Okay, Christy, Ryan, I'm gonna take that as a second. So right now, everybody within your participants' Zoom screen, as an EA voting member, please select yes, no, or then type in abstain if you would like to abstain from this vote. We have 22 members of the Employee Assembly on right now, and this count will go into the resolution. So again, if you're a voting member of the Employee Assembly, please type in yes. Please go into participants, put in yes or no, and then abstain if you would like to abstain. So as of right now, the count is 20 yeses, 0 nos, and 0 abstentions. 21 yeses, Looks like Michelle is back. We have 21 yeses, zero noes, and zero abstentions. So with that, this resolution passes by a majority. Thank you all for your participation in getting this resolution passed. Let us move on to Brandon Fortenberry, who's going to speak about the code of conduct. So Brandon, are you here?
I am here.
Okay.
Thank you, Hey. I just wanted to, let folks know that I have been elected the chair of the Codes and Judicial Committee on the University and Assembly. And as such, it's my church to help us to gather feedback on the current revisions that are out there. So we've all seen those revisions and kind of talked about that. I want to do an additional plug for folks to take a moment to visit the website or pass along to your constituents that website so that we can get as much public comment as possible. We have a deadline of November 17th with which to get that back to University Council and the President's office. So we're on a strict kind of quick timeline here. And as such, one thing I did want to ask is the ability to get members from the Employee Assembly here appointed to the Codes and Judicial Committee. We're having our first meeting this Friday at 10:30 a.m. so that we can put together a very fast timeline in which to get comment put together for this. And I know that I don't know what the process is for us to be able to get the committee members assigned from this area. But that's our hope is to get those folks assigned by this Friday. So I guess my question would be, I guess either for Gina or Hey, how we would go about getting committee members appointed.
Gina, I'm going to send this over to you.
Sure, I think it's, let's see, Jamie's probably, I'm not sure if Jamie's working on this actively. I know anecdotally that I've heard from a former CJC member on the Employee Assembly that there may be interest. I think it's really just a matter of putting the word out and then, thank you, Jen. I didn't want to name you by name. to just go ahead and pull members, and then we've got to, there's a need to have non-EA members as well, and they can just be appointed by Jamie. So there's the formality isn't that there's necessarily a need to have another election or anything like that.
Thank you for that clarification. Yeah, Jen had mentioned she was interested, and so I would love to have Jen join us again in the committee. And believe we get, is it two representatives from the Employees and Assembly? And then we have how many non-assembly members do we?
Two from and two by.
And
so,
two by, okay.
Yep. Is it just a 1 year? So that's, you go on this committee just for 1 year at a time?
I actually think it's, that's one of the places that the governing documents of the two assemblies need to be coordinated, because I think the way that it's, I can't remember whether it's the EA or the UA bylaws are a point for a 2 year term, but also the other one says that all terms expire at the end of the assembly session. So ideally it would be for 2 years, but that also assumes that your eligibility would carry over for those same 2 years. So it just needs to be looked at and tweaked. And I can help with that. If that's something Rigel would be interested in looking at in the governing docs.
Looks like Wendy's saying for this, it's one EA representative and one non-EA representative.
Last year it was me and Laura Taylor from the EA.
In the University Assembly bylaws, if I can speak, actually, in the bylaws, there's actually 11 committee members on each committee, and for each assembly, it's one assembly member and one non-assembly member. So I'm not sure how both you and Laura were appointed on it, but that's how it's stated in the UA bylaws for committee composition.
Well, good news, Jen, we got our one from, and now I would ask Jamie if you have any, or if anyone has a buy that we could we could get into the committee by this Friday.
So if anybody, Jamie?
I don't have someone, but we'll work on that and put the word out if anyone knows of anyone that to recommend.
Thank you. And so if anybody has any recommendations, send them to Jamie. Jen?
I guess, sorry, I didn't raise my hand. Unless somebody else wants to try it out, I don't mean to take the spot from anybody. I just have this desire to see the project through to the end. But if there's somebody else interested, please jump in.
Absolutely. Is there anybody else interested in the Code of Conduct Committee? I don't see anybody, but again, send all of your recommendations to Jamie and he'll work with Brendan to sort that out. Are there any other questions for Brendan? Any comments? Brendan?
Just want to add that our goal and hope is to hold a public forum next week. We do have to decide on some parameters and have those agreed upon before we can move forward with those. So if we do that, Ellen, I may want to ask if you could help just to spread the word. I know that Wendy will get that out, but also for Ellen to follow up and for folks, and I'll send that out to your constituencies to get as many participants in that public forum if we are able to reach an agreement by which we can hold that.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions or concerns? I'm looking for some hands raised. Seeing none, we have 8 minutes left for open discussion. So I want to open the floor for open discussion. Are there any concerns you want to bring to the larger EA body? Do you have any questions? Now is a good time for us all to kind of congregate and speak on matters regarding the staff in this open forum. I'm looking for any hands raised. Okay, Joe.
My question centers around what our bylaws state and what our capacity is, personally and professionally. It says we are to be on 3 committees. Many of those committees are full already. And I'm wondering if that should be a topic of conversation where we revisit.
Thanks, Joe. I'm going to turn this over to Rigel, who's the parliamentarian. I think he's got probably some more information on that than I do. Rigel?
Yeah. Joe, can you point me to the line in the doc where that's stated?
Yeah, give me a moment.
I've got them all 3 in front of me, and I've been trying to find that specific line.
In the meantime, Ellen, did you have your hand raised?
No, I was just shoving food in my face.
Okay. So I'm going to allow Joe and Rigel to work on this independently. Is there any other question for the larger group while we're all here? I'm just going to search for any additional hands raised. Christy?
Just to offer information. So we've been working with the Welfare Committee has been working with Linda Krollhall and Michelle Erdeby closely. And we've been given indication that there will be a remote work guidance document released to the staff before Thanksgiving that will include information about working from home wellness, so ergonomic issues, support, workplace space support. And we were given indication today that it may include also some notion of how long we should be planning to be in this state and clarity around, are you encouraged to come back to the campus or are you encouraged to stay home? So that's coming. I also wanted to just make sure everyone was aware that there was the Child Care Hardship Fund was announced earlier this week. It's available to all staff. So if you haven't seen that or you have staff or colleagues who could benefit from that, it's available on the HR site.
I just put it in the chat.
Thank you, Brian. Is there any other anything else anybody would like to discuss? It is 1:25. I believe that Joe and Rigel are going to work separately to figure out, you know, what this mandate is for the community participation. I think for now, as we've said in the past, I think a lot of people are inundated with work. So I wouldn't want to commit anybody to have to, you know, participate on, you know, three committees. That doesn't seem realistic. Ellen, did you have your hand raised or were you again eating?
No, that time I did have my hand raised, but then you were saying what I was going to say. I think we had kind of addressed this in executive committee a little bit, talking about like the committee commitment. And I agree with Joe that it is a very high demand. And then we had talked about like possibly changing that, but then Rigel said that maybe the bylaws didn't really state that we had to be on three. And then I remember reading it somewhere also, but then like he couldn't find it. So I think we will definitely work on clarifying that. And maybe that's something that we can think about revising for the future. Cause we talked about now that we have a larger EA body come spring elections, we'll have more people to serve on the committees, but we're still not so sure about like a three person commitment, but more of just making sure that everyone is, you know, on a committee and that they're serving their purpose. So I think that
is the bylaws also state not only the number of committees we're supposed to be part of, but it also states how many people should be on the committee.
Correct.
11 people.
So I think that's something Rigel is working on. So I believe Christy had her hand raised. Christy, I'm going to recognize you.
I'm sorry, it's the same. Joe's raising the same issue. I would encourage us not only to look at how many committees we're asking everyone to participate on, but that there is a restriction to the number of people that can participate. That's all.
Thank you, Joe and Christy. I think you bring up great points. Gina, I see your hand is raised.
I was just going to remind everybody that the bylaws were written when the body was much smaller. So it makes total sense to look at this. Don't let them be restrictive so much as approach them as you are with a review and make them work for the current size of the employee assembly.
All right, thank you. It is now 1:28. Do we have any other comments, feedback? If not, we can adjourn at 1:28. All right, Brian.
I move we adjourn.
Okay, do I get a second? All right, Rigel seconds, Joe seconds. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, I move that we adjourn at 1:28. Thank you all for your participation today. I think we went through a lot of material in a short amount of time. Thank you all for being a part of this. Take care.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.